The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is a very special episode. Look at all these instructors that I have compiled. I can feel my handicap lowering already. Mark Immelman is here. Mark, good to have you.
With all these teachers around, you should be breaking into a cold sweat because you never know what's going to come out of this lot.
I'm nervous already. Greg Ducharme here as usual. Greg, good to have you.
We can try to help you out the best we can, Rick, but Mark and I haven't been able to do it yet, so we have to bring in, you know, someone special, as you say.
Well, you know, Greg, there is that thing that's known as talent that's a requisite if you really want to be elite, you know?
Oh, God, fired. That's one way to look at it.
And teach talent, indeed. You know him from A New Breed of Golf. You know him from Course Record on CBS Sports. It's Michael Breen. Michael, thanks for hopping on and joining us.
Well, you know, when the guys told me that we had a chance to crawl into your brain for a little bit and kind of mix things up, I went, come on, let me get involved. So they waved me home.
It's a scary place. I mean, yep. You know, proceed with caution for sure. Very cool. Well, let's take an opportunity. And one of the things that we've kind of realized, and Greg, you and I have tapped into this before, you know, kind of these instructional based episodes. And then what we're going to do is we're going to kind of look ahead at some of the swings that we might see coming up at the Ryder Cup. These are really popular, right? Everybody's looking for whether it's a fix or just more knowledge in general. So I think we're onto something here.
They do seem to work really well. Very popular. Michael knows his entire career, all of your popularity comes from instruction, nothing else.
That's it.
They just want the golf tip. So everybody wants to get better at the game, and it's cool to take a chance to do that.
Yeah, indeed. And Michael, you know, the evolution of golf, especially from training, from instruction, from technology, feels like it is getting faster and faster. I mean, TrackMan just released a new product this morning, and you're seeing access to more simulators and more data. How has this world, your world, evolved in the last handful of years?
You know, it's interesting, and I know Mark can talk to this very well. You know, we really aren't in the guessing game anymore. You can make a swing and you can make one that feels identical, and you can look at numbers and you can see, wow, the ball speed was way different from the prior swing. You understand face angles, you understand angles of attack. But the thing that's really become very interesting for me, and I know Mark, you can comment on this, is the intelligence and the wisdom of the student now. It's a very different world than it was, you know, 40 years ago when I started teaching. There wasn't a lot of knowledge out there about, you know, absolute knowledge of here's how the club is looking as it comes into the ball. When the video camera came out, and I got my first video camera back in 1988, that was this kind of revolutionary thing. And even then, we realized that, you know, the camera kind of lies and distorts some things a bit. But nowadays with launch monitors and simulators and other technical gadgets, we really kind of know exactly what's going on, and so do the students.
Hey, you and I were part of the Sony Handycam Brigade. Remember the bag?
Oh, yeah.
The that was a little before Greg's time over there. I want to, you know, as I watch golfers come out, Michael, I see, you know, young players so much more prepared because they can be at their home course hitting on a launch monitor, for argument's sakes, and seeing these numbers and go, well, dang, I'm launching the thing as fast as Victor Hovland. So I guess by ostensibly, I can't compete. But what I want to ask you is sort of the shadow side of this whole thing, because, you know, back in the day, you had to have a very informed, educated eye with a whole lot of experience and wisdom to be successful as a teacher at the highest level. I find the proliferation of golf teachers now is rampant because they have TrackMan, have FlatScope, have whatever, force plates, and you're in business. So do you think perhaps maybe there's one or two folks that shouldn't be doing it, that just have the gear and sort of reading the information too much?
You know, you bring up a really good point, because the fact of the matter is that you're right. There are a lot of people that are in the social media circles that, because they have all that stuff, all of a sudden they think they're a great teacher. And I think it's one thing to know what's going on. It's another thing to be able to get somebody to understand how to alter it. And I think instruction is different than knowledge. And I think that, you know, you take a doctor, for instance, they're going to have an x-ray machine. They're going to have all kinds of different things to try to let them understand what they need to do to help their I don't know, it's not a student, but they're, you know, patient out. But it's another thing to have the wisdom of fixing the problem. And I think one of the things that goes on in our business now is that you buy a launch monitor, you buy a simulator, and all of a sudden you're a great coach. And that's not really the way it is. And you and I both know that what makes a great coach is way past the numbers. The numbers are important. They help players improve, but there's a whole lot of stuff that's sitting on the periphery that helps players become better players. And that includes the statistics, that includes the wisdom of understanding when to go at a certain hole location, how to manage the emotional things. We just saw Grayson Murray win, and you know, his conversation with his new mental coach, a Navy SEAL, and how he deals with fear, which is a big part of it. So there's a lot of little different things that goes on in being a great coach. But I do think that you can't be a great coach nowadays without having all of the apparatus. If you don't have that, you've got to work a whole lot harder to be taken seriously.
No doubt. And just one more thing. I mean, you speak of, I guess, the Mount Rushmore of instructors. It's also the wisdom, and you, I think you touched on it, to be able to sort of leave somebody alone, like a Jim Furyk or like a Scotty Scheffler. I mean, can you imagine how many folks with launch monitor and such, yeah, they might look at Scotty's numbers and go, well, that's eye-popping, but you can't be having that footwork kind of thing. There's a innate wisdom in that too, right?
Well, I think, you know, and you certainly understand this. Greg understands it as well. I think when you start to understand a golf swing, you understand basically controlling what the club face is doing and what the path is doing, both in a vertical and horizontal direction. And everything else is kind of window dressing. It looks a certain way, right? And we all think, well, Adam Scott's golf swing is something to emulate. Well, so is Scottie Scheffler's. And what you're seeing is, you know, an individual's ability to control the face and the path of the golf club. And that's all the best in the world do. And so what we try to do as great coaches is to try to help them understand what they can do from a physical standpoint to be able to allow the club to work properly. And also then, too, from a mental standpoint, from an emotional standpoint, from a training standpoint, you know, the physical, the exertion that's taking place and the training of your body and the muscles and the such that, you know, there's a lot that goes on in it. And I do think that TPI has been a really important and a very necessary part of understanding how to help people play better golf. So I think there's a lot of things that are incorporated in the golf swing soup, if you will. And I think that the technology is it's an important part, but it's a small part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this got me thinking a little bit because Greg, as I'm sure you know, I just started taking lessons recently for the first time, and I'm happy and comfortable with my guy, but now I'm a little bit nervous, right? If somebody has, you know, if somebody has an iPhone and a social media account, they might be perceived as an expert. What are some rules of thumb for those looking to get kind of the real deal instruction? You know, where do I start? How do I filter out the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between?
There are a few places you can go to. Golf Digest is one. They rank the best teachers on a couple different categories. The top 50 teachers in America, which Michael's a part of. You have the best young teachers that are under a certain age, which I'm a part of.
There you go. I was making sure you were going to include that part. Okay.
Of course. You have the best teachers in state, which helps you localize things a little bit. So that's one way you can go about doing it. But this is a great piece of advice that I heard once from Hank Haney, and I think it really rings true, Rick. You find somebody who's gotten to a level that you want to get to in your golf game. And if they've helped, if this coach has gotten somebody to the level that you want to get to, let's say the PGA Tour, you go and work with somebody who's gotten somebody to the PGA Tour, there's a pretty good sign that they can get you where you want to get to. So part of that has to do with what your goals are. Part of it has to do with, you know, what kind of expert you're working with.
I want to add in on this, because I think this is an important part of this. It's not all just the teacher as well. It's the student. And, you know, we can prescribe whatever we prescribe to a given student. And if the student doesn't do what we are asking them to do, the greatest teacher in the world is not going to be a great teacher for that individual. And I think that's one of the reasons why motivation is such an important part of what we do as great coaches, is the ability to assist students and motivate students to practice properly and to understand what they need to work on and how they can go about getting better, and to help them fall in love with the game of golf and the betterment of the game of golf. And I think the coach is a really important part of this, but the student is a very important part of this. And I think one of the most important parts for the student is being open-minded and realizing that, you know, they're an active participant in this, and their insights and their wisdom. We just heard Justin Thomas talk about this, how he's starting to take more control over the direction that's going on with his game. And I think that's something that all students can learn from. You have to have an understanding that your mind is a really important part of all this. There's a great quote by Henry Ford: whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And what that basically means is that you're a very important part of the success and the direction that you go in, no matter who is telling you something. If you don't believe it's right, then it's not going to be right. And if you believe it's right, it'll be right. So I think that's an important part as well.
And just to add on that real quick, Rick and Mark, it's amazing to me how many things, the more that we learn, the more I listen to you, Michael, how many things there are around the outside of the game that affect your golf swing that may be more important than your golf swing. And perhaps the technology has let us practice a little bit less and work on our golf swing a little less because we know more. But all of a sudden, the TPI stuff that you mentioned, Michael, the nutrition that you eat, the thoughts that you're thinking on the golf course, those things have become more and more and more important. And it almost seems like they're, in a lot of ways, the work in those areas are replacing the 8-hour sessions on the range, you know, and the sessions in every area are becoming a little more efficient. It's fascinating to me.
And what I have found in the last couple of months is just my knowledge of the golf swing, you know, the relationship between club face and club path. You know, I kind of generally knew, but being able to translate that to my own swing, and when something does go wrong, be able to self-correct a little bit. Mark, you know, we've talked about teacher, we've talked about student. I also think kind of the method here in 2023 is interesting as well, right? It's not always be directly in front of your instructor or in front of your student. There's a lot more digital instruction happening, whether it's through an iPhone, through Zoom, whether you're speaking through YouTube or through a television. There's a lot of ways to get the message across. And I'm sure, Mark, that creates some difficulties as well.
Yeah, certainly. Well, look, I can speak to that first off, and then you speak of digital. I've seen your swing improve Or was that the one Instagram swing that you put up there and the other eight weren't so great? Well,
obviously, I delete the worst ones, but the, even the best ones over every month are getting better. So that's
good. Well, I can see the change. And look, I'm a child of the international sphere in golf. And so as a result, we didn't have access to great minds and such over in South Africa. And so we had to learn by reading. And now reading has just taken on a different form. You get shows like Michael's, you get shows like mine, and where this is where the key thing comes in, whether you're taking a lesson on Skillist or whether you're having a FaceTime deal with Michael or Greg or whatever the case might be, the communication is crucial. And it's only as good, I've always believed, because I have this podcast, which a lot of it is audio. So I have to be really precise and accurate with the words I use, because my message is only as good is what it's understood. And so if I had to advise anyone, and then I'll kick it to Michael, with all this proliferation of all of these different ways to get information right now, you got to make sure that you understand it, because if you really honestly understand it, then you will know if it is right for you or not. Because I'll be honest, I mean, I'm trawling social media often, and some of the stuff that's coming out there is sexy as heck. But then I'm like, now, hold on a second, is this for me? Because if I'm just going, well, I got to do this, and then I watch some guy talk to me about shallow this and do that and dorsiflex this, I mean, it's going to sound incredible, but the question is this for me? And so that's where I feel like with all the stuff, communication and understanding are paramount to success.
Well, and I, you know what, you speak absolute wisdom. And the other thing that I would add to that is that not only do you have to understand what they're talking about, but then you have to be able to apply some drills and things that allow you to develop skills. And I think drills done properly will create skills. And I think a lot of times what happens to people is they come up with this, I call it water's wet. They come up with this idea, hey, you got to do this in order for you to be able to play great golf, but they don't tell you what to do in order for you to enhance that or develop that skill. And so I think that's an issue as well. There's little doubt that there's way more information in the game of golf and the golf swing than any other sport. I have not seen any other sport that has more information written about it. And what's also curious to me as well is that there are many times where the information that's out there, they kind of go against one another if you don't really know exactly what you're talking about. You might see a Jimmy Ballard type method, and you might see a stack and tilt type method, which kind of oppose each other. Both can be very effective. But at the same time, if what is being said doesn't bring you back to how you move the club properly, the club face control, the path control, the speed, contact, all those things, if it doesn't do that for you, it's probably time to find an alternative path.
Preach, brother. Brother Michael.
Yeah.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to continue this conversation, but we're going to do it through the lens of some of the swings and some of the players that we are going to see at the Ryder Cup. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners. Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt. And I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And super feet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. And we're back. All right, let's continue this conversation. And maybe the most talked about swing heading into Rome, Greg, is the one of Justin Thomas. And we saw him in Napa at the Fortinet Championship. We've seen on Instagram him tinkering with all the different devices on the range, as Michael alluded to earlier, maybe taking more control of his own process. When you look at an elite ball striker, a guy who has been the top player in the world, going through a struggle, when you look at his swing and you look at everything that's going on around him right now, what do you see?
Well, the one thing is I loved a couple things about the video of him working on his swing. One, he's using swim noodles. And you know, if you've watched any of Michael Breed's videos, you know, those are the best instructional device. Yes. And underneath those swim noodles was PVC pipe.
It's another thing I believe in.
Yes. So I really think that Justin got that instructional device from
A
new breed of golf.
He's peeking in.
And it was for that reason, it was really wise. But what I like is it seemed to me like he was trying to get his arms more vertical, a little more upright, which is what Justin Thomas used to always do. That's the position at the top of his golf swing where he's able to work the ball both ways and play shots, especially the fade. And I think over this past year, his ability to play a fade, even though he likes to work it both ways, the fade is the stock shot. And while he has that stock shot, as that starts to come back, all of a sudden he can take really difficult, challenging situations and make them much more simple.
The way that I always think about this, Michael, is, you know, we hear the top players kind of say you're never as bad as you think you are. You're never as good as you think you are. A guy who seems so close at all times is Justin Thomas. Is it physical? Is it just confidence, right? Go out there, start playing well and watch the swing turn around.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And I know Mark can talk about this. He follows the tour regularly. I think a lot of times when you get to the level of working with the elite level player, the quest for better sometimes can lead in some bad directions. And I think what happened with JT is, you know, he's looking at his game and he's going, man, you know, if I can get to where I can drive the ball a little bit better, I'm going to take that next step. And you're talking about a guy that's a two-time major champion, but at the same time, you know, everybody wants more. Everybody wants better. And so I think what he did was he started chasing something that I don't know that he needed to chase. And what he started to do was he started to try to get out of his swing because he is a little upright. He with the driver lay the golf club down a little bit too much. And so he started getting into a flatter plane with his arm swing. And all of a sudden, in an effort to try to take that laying down out of the swing, he all of a sudden lost his sort of dependable part of his game, and that was his iron play. He's always been a very good wedge player, and that got a little bit weak as well. And you now look at a guy who was kind of so-so with his tee game and so-so with his putting game, but he had reliance with his iron play, and he had some reliance around the greens. And now he kind of lost that iron game, and things went a little sideways. And I think what I like seeing with Justin, and I think one of the things that we all need to do is ask a simple question of why. Simon Sinek wrote a book called Start With Why. Why are you making the change that you're making, and is it going to make that big of a difference? I think there have been a lot of great players that have played, particularly lately, and I go back to Jordan Spieth, who have played really good golf, not being great drivers of the golf ball. But their iron play has bailed them out. Their short game has assisted them. And of course, if you get a little streaky with your putter, it can lead to some really good things. And of course, JT he's got a Hall of Fame career. I don't know that he needed to alter his motion. But I do think that when players at the elite level start chasing better, it sometimes doesn't lead in a great direction. And I think as he is working his way back to where he was with his motion, I think you're going to start to see him perform more similarly to what he did in 2022 and prior to that than what you saw in 2023. And Mark, you know this a lot. You've worked with great players. Sometimes that quest for better can really lead to some bad places.
You're so right. And I've just got a couple things I'd add to what you say, and everything you say is just on point. First off, just like you say, Rick, I feel like all these guys at this level, and every golfer listening to this or watching this has had that moment where you really only one swing thought or one idea or one swing feel away from success, especially at this level and one big week, you know, that turns careers at times. I mean, I've been privy to this when I was working with some guys on the PGA Tour. So that's number one. Number two, I like what Michael said about the power, because Rory, by his own admission, you know, when he started chasing after more with Bryson, he started to do his golf swing in, and the wedge game went in the tank, you know. And the truth of these guys is, on these golf courses that are 7,500-7,600 yards long, they play kind of firm. If you just put the ball in the fairway anyhow, you got scoring clubs in hand. And that's where Justin made his money. And so this is where I get, and this is, you know, not that Mike Thomas doesn't know what he's doing, but when you start trying to improve one area of the game, to Michael's point, like a SWOT analysis for argument's sake, right? The weakness in JT's game was the driver was errant and the putter was kind of iffy. So then you start to devote more time there, and you disregard, if you will, your strengths. And all of a sudden your strength, and every great player in the Hall of Fame has been a fantastic iron player and they can putt. Then your strength starts to go away. Now, all of a sudden, you've got three buckets of your game that are all average and not that one that's glowing, like Michael was saying. So I question that. And then I've got to say this, because I'm an on-course guy. And as an on-course announcer, I love a player-caddy combination that is talkative. Because then I can go through 3 hours of show on the weekend and not say very much. And I sound like a genius, okay? And there are a few couples, Michael Griller and Jordan Spieth. Griller doesn't say a word except for yes, no. Spieth goes. Tyrrell Hatton before and after shots, you know he's going to do something. And then there's JT and Bones. Now, I'm not criticizing Bones as a hell of a caddy. You know, he's caddied for Scott Simpson, Larry Myers, Phil Mickelson, Justin Thomas, Hall of Fame. Jimmy Johnson, same thing, was just a little bit more quiet. And he would almost probe Justin to answer his own questions. And I hear so much talking now between shots, and I wonder at times if he's not sort of overanalyzing and overthinking shots. I guarantee you, Rory and JT both, you give them half a set of irons or half a set of clubs, and you're like, go play. They're going to find a way to shoot under 70. But then when you got all this stuff and you're overreading winds and stuff like that and overthinking a lie, I mean, you come up, play your gut. You got to where you are because of the skill of who you are, what's in your soul, and your hands and your feet stuff. And don't handcuff yourself by this influx of information that all of a sudden you're like, well, am I right? Well, maybe not. And then all of a sudden, I know for sure. The tension is the biggest wrecker of a golf swing in the world. And then you go to working on this, and then all of a sudden there's this doubt that creeps in. And look, I liked what I saw out of him this week. Was a little concerned maybe that he got a bit errant under pressure Sunday, because this Ryder Cup thing is pretty pressure-packed. But look, he's Justin Thomas. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I like where he is, where he's like, I'm going to figure me out and I'm going to go do golf. I would say, hey, talk less, react more. You're going to be just fine.
I like that. Talk less, react more. Well, let's head over to the other side of the Ryder Cup, to the European team here, Greg, and we'll look at Victor Hovland. And I think to the average viewer, those of us at home, the positions that Victor gets into in his golf swing, I couldn't even fathom. I'm not sure how to make my body get into some of those positions, specifically at the top. How would you describe what he's doing with the club face and the club position at the top of his swing and how he's able to deliver that club to the ball so effectively?
I would classify it as the modern model. It's the model golf swing in many ways that Michael, you taught me. This is a swing where he gets the club in his left wrist, his lead wrist, in a very bowed position. It gets a very strong closed club face at the top of the backswing, and then he uses his body to rotate with great force on the way down, and he doesn't have to close the face on the way down. The faster he rotates his body, it's like the more the club face gets held off. It's just the faster the ball goes instead of the more errant the ball goes. And this is as reliable as it gets on the PGA Tour for that reason. So I think it's a move that requires some strength. He is very physically strong, very mobile, and able to move his body in ways that are extremely effective. And it just becomes more and more stable as he becomes stronger and stronger. So it's explosive with his lower body and his big muscles, and that he's able to do that because he gets the club face in a square or a closed position at the top, which is probably modern day square.
Go ahead, Rick. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Michael, you know, the idea when I hear that closed club face at the top, the normal average recreational player would kind of assume that Victor plays that right to left draw, but he really doesn't. He plays what he calls a squeeze cut. So how does that club face being closed at the top interact with path where he's able to hit that squeeze cut?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we throw terms out in the game, and I know, you know, Mark will smile at this, but we throw terms around in the game that make little to no sense as far as I'm concerned. And I remember having this conversation with Peter Costas, how if you open your stance, you aim left, and when you open your club face, you aim right. How can open be both left and both right, right? So you're kind of like, it makes no sense. And I think that we have this term of a closed face at the top of a golf swing. And I can remember having conversations with many teachers through time. And I've been doing this for a while. And there were some, not me, but there were some who believed that when that club face was pointed to the sky at the top of the backswing, that it was actually square, not closed, but square. So what I can tell you is that I think if we take terms and we throw them away, I think we've got a chance to really be productive. And we start talking about lefts and rights. What I can tell you is that what Victor does is he takes the club and it doesn't have a lot of rotation. The shaft doesn't spin a lot in his backswing. That's why when he takes the club back, his club face is pointing to the ground towards the ground when it's halfway in the backswing, because he doesn't have a lot of forearm rotation. Forearm rotation is going to spin the shaft, which is going to open up the club face or get the club face to, in effect, add loft to it. And it's going to expose the bounce to the ground a little bit more freely instead of the leading edge. What he also does is when he goes in the opposite direction, so he starts the downswing now, what he does is he's a little bit over the top with the handle. Well, one of the things that's important about laying the shaft down is having the handle be over the top of the backswing path. And so when you take the handle of the golf club and you bring it inside a little bit, which is what he'll do, and then he brings it back down with the handle on top of it, well, that move will then take the club face and it will open it up a little bit. So while it appears as if he's going to hit a pretty dramatic hook, based on what his face looks like at the top of the golf swing, what we're terming closed, what he really does is he takes that position and he gets into some forearm rotation, not exactly like, but similar to what Matt Wolf does in his swing, where all of his forearm rotation happens in the downswing when he starts going in the opposite direction. That handle starts working out over the top. That throws the club face in a little bit more of an open position, but he's still dragging it with the body rotation, as Greg talked about. And that really is the modern golf swing. And I think one of the things that has allowed this, and this is to me, one of the fun parts that people don't really talk about, at least at the recreational level. Now, at the higher level, like Mark and Greg, we understand this. This is where club fitting comes in. The club fitting and the evolution of the golf club itself has really allowed for the golf swing to become better. Because if we played golf with the equipment that they used back in 1913 or 1923, we would be really hindered. You look at the way golf, the golf club was swung back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in the reverse C in an effort to try to get this ball up into the air because of the way the golf club was made. Well, now all of a sudden, things are quite a bit different, and you get fit for something, and you get perimeter weighting, and you get shafts that help you, and there's all kinds of different things to optimize your launch conditions. And when you optimize launch conditions, what you're actually doing is you're optimizing motion, and that's one of the reasons why, in my opinion, players are able to swing the club so fast, is because the golf club now enables that. And so I look at this as what I see with Victor, what we see out of the modern golf swing is really this gathering of wisdom that has taken place over hundreds of years, where we have developed a golf ball, a golf club, a golf swing, an understanding of technique and statistics and things like that to allow players to be able to swing the golf club the way they swing the golf club and force golf clubs, or I should say golf courses, to accept the motions that players are making. Now you see the game of golf go to single shot shapes. That's what is prevalent nowadays. You see a Brooks Koepka stand up on a hole at Belrive that is begging for a draw, and he's cutting it off the inside bunker of a dog leg left, because that's the way these players play best, is single shot shape. And back to Justin Thomas, one of the things that I would like to see him do is go to a single shot shape with his driver. It's proven to be effective with great players. Scottie Scheffler is mostly exclusively moving the ball left to right. Rory McIlroy is mostly exclusively moving the ball right to left. Go to a single shot shape, you're going to play a lot better. But what you see with Victor Hovland and what you see with players nowadays, that bowed wrist and that cut shape, that's how you play great golf. And it really is controlling the club face and marrying up that path with that controlled club face to produce tremendous consistency.
Rick, if I might, I just bring this down to sort of the amateur level too, because look, we're all aspirational and we all see Rory drive it or Victor drive it and we want to hit the thing like them. But the truth is, with the swing that Michael and Greg describe, it is the modern pass nowadays. But this high-speed deal, it's almost like this environment is created now where there's no end to how fast the ball is going to go. Because they're getting bigger and stronger. Golf clubs are getting better. Golf balls are going faster. The harder they hit the thing and the farther it's got to go, the less the ball's got to spin. So now there are these low-spinning golf balls, high-launching guys. They got to hit the thing hard. So it's creating an environment where they have to hit it harder to just keep the ball in the air. You understand where I'm going here? And then for it to stay aloft and really maximize, it needs some of that fade spin, because if you're hitting something hard like that and it's tumbling from right to left for a right-hander, it's falling out of the air. Now, it might go on the ground, but these guys don't want the ball to go on the ground, remember? They want the thing to stop as close to where it lands as possible, because that's how they play the game. So for the amateur golfer listening to this, heck, if you're strong and you can go fast, by all means go there. If you can't, then I would more sort of advocate that you may want to sling the club head a little bit more, a la Louis Oosthuizen, Rory to a certain extent, because what Victor does, what Brooks does, these hard rotators, even Morikawa to a certain extent, that takes a limber back and it takes a lot of ball speed to keep that golf ball in the air.
I love the idea, Greg, and we'll put a bow on this of the bowed wrist, because that is the one thing that I've been working on, right? I've played so often with that open club face, and to even get back to here, back to like square, that was like climbing Mount Everest for me, right? The idea of going even further than that to where you see a Dustin Johnson, where you see a Victor Hovland, is like climbing Everest a second time. Now I'm working on it. I'm at base camp. I'm trying to get there, but that really has been not only one of the things that has been the thing I've worked on the hardest, but the most beneficial in kind of the way that my swing is headed.
And Good news. It's the right thing for you to work on, right? I mean, because that club face was absolutely open.
Yes.
And guess what? That's where the golf ball would go. And this is a really big thing in knowing versus thinking. You have this piece of evidence that says, okay, in my simulator, every side spins to the right. When I play golf, every shot I hit misses to the right. I know I'm a statistic. I miss right, just like everybody else. I slice. Well, that's a sign that the club face is pointed to the right. And so there used to always be this thought that golf's a game of opposites. If you're missing right, it's because you're swinging left. You know, if you got to hit down to make it go up.
But Greg,
the more that we've learned, we kind of know that's not really true.
Greg, hold on a sec. But I thought you slice it if you lift your head at impact. Now, come on.
What is this stuff? Well, yeah, that or the other thing too, Mark, is bending your left arm. That'll make you slice too.
Yeah, well, Rick, what he says is so true. And I use a little gadget called a HackMotion device that gives you real-time data on where your wrist is throughout the swing.
Oh, interesting.
And there's deals like you talk about the bowed wrist. Sean Foley and company have come out with a Pro Sender, which is basically just neutral, which is like slightly cupped marginally, because a lot of golfers, I can't get here at the top of my swing. I'd see Jesus before that happens. I just need to make sure that it's not excessively extended in the opposite direction, because, and Michael talked about this at the top, we've all got these ranges we play within, and sometimes we can get kind of off the road, if you will, and that's where you want to find where your neutral is.
Mm. Yeah, it's been super, super helpful for me. Okay, we are going to talk a little bit about Scottie Scheffler's putter, and then I'll run through a couple of quick hitters on the Ryder Cup. And first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
And we're back. Let's go from the full swing down to that little baby swing, that putting stroke, Michael, because it's been a big story for Scottie Scheffler this year, having one of the best tee to green seasons statistically that we have ever seen. But the troubles come on the putting surfaces. And I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there is not as much film, data, technical stuff in terms of putting. I feel like putting has often been about feel. Am I wrong? Is there something that Scottie should be working on, or has he just got to do a better job of rolling the rock?
You know, well, he does need to do a better job of rolling the rock, no question about it. I think there are some players that will improve by knowledge, and there are some players that if you give them more knowledge, they get more confused. So I can't tell you how Scottie's brain works. What I would suggest is that Scottie really needs to make, in my opinion, a dramatic change, because frankly, what he's doing isn't working. And he's tried a few things. He's tried going to a little bit of a bigger blade. And then of course we saw him go to a mallet that he had specially built to kind of look like a blade or act like a blade, but it doesn't really work out that well. And I think what he needs to do is he needs to start putting a little bit of mass in this putter. I think he's got to weight this thing down a little bit more. One of the things that I see with Scottie is he's actually, and we've got video in here to show this. He's actually got I don't want to say he's got the yips, because that's not what I'm saying, but I do think he has a little flinch in his putting stroke at times, that his knees move a tremendous amount on very short putts. His eyes look very, very quickly to the hole. And so there are some technical things that he needs to work on in order for him to get to where his putting is dependable. And right now you look at his driver and it's dependable. You look at his iron play and it's dependable. You look at his short game and it's dependable. And you look at his putting and it's awful. It really is. It's awful. And so what I would suggest doing is for Scotty to do a real hard look and focus on quieting his body down, quieting his knee movement down, quieting his head movement down, and putting some mass in that putter, allowing that thing to swing a little bit more and get away from results. And I think one of the things that happens to players that hit a lot of greens, and Mark, you could certainly speak to this, a lot of players that, you know, the statistics many, many years ago, we used to say, if you can make one birdie putt for every four greens that you hit, you're doing a pretty good job. And so if you're Scottie Scheffler and you're hitting 16 greens in a round, you should make four birdies. Well, if you look at what he does and you take out the par fives that he hits in two and makes birdies with two putts, he's not really hitting that average the way he should. And what happens to a lot of players, particularly very good ball strikers, is they struggle making putts because the majority of their putts are coming outside of that 20-foot range. You take a guy like Brad Faxon, who doesn't really hit a lot of fairways, and then as a result, he doesn't really hit a lot of greens, and all of a sudden, he's hitting wedge shots to try to save par, and he's hitting them into 12, 11, 10 feet. He starts making those, and all of a sudden, we go, Brad Faxon is a great putter. Well, what happens is you start thinking you're a great putter because you see that ball go into the hole. Scotty doesn't see the ball go into the hole very often. So I think also, too, one of the things that I would do if I was coaching him is I would get him to hit some putts from shorter distance. A lot of these, you know, believe it or not, 2, 3, 4 foot putts, I would have him hit a pile of those just so that he gets used to seeing that ball going into the hole and then stretch it out from there. And I think that I feel like there's an apprehension in Scotty's mind that we don't know about, because if you watch him putt and you watch how quickly his eyes try to gather the ball after he has struck the putt, it's almost like he's trying to make the ball go in with his eyes. And of course, when you're doing that, you're in trouble, and his putting stroke is not great.
Amen, Michael. Absolutely. I would even add to that, because here's the thing about Scotty, and this is the conundrum. He keeps it awfully simple. Like when I've talked to him about technique, he talks about being in rhythm and finishing balanced. His feet all over the show, but that's him. And every day before every round of golf, he's got a 5-iron in his bag with a formed grip on it, a molded grip. And he checks his grip every day. That's about as far as Scotty goes technique-wise. And Randy Smith, to his wisdom and credits, allows him to do that. So as far as the putter goes, I'm with Michael. You got to match a putter style to your style of stroke. And his tends inward with all the movement and the face wants to shut. So you want to get something that's going to facilitate some success with that. But then I'd say further to just making putts and seeing them go in is, I started teaching golf in 1995. And in all those years, I haven't seen a ball fall up a hill ever. I mean, ever. And I've never seen the hole come back to the ball either. So I'd say to him, hey, Scotty, when you go play 18 holes today, even if it's in the Waste Management WM Phoenix Open, I want to see 18 putts, if they miss on the high side of the hole, beyond the hole. Because I've seen so many putts at his hit that have nosedived little low, inch and a half or so short, end up on the low side of the hole. You do that at Augusta, all of a sudden that thing is now 4 feet away instead of 2 feet away. Now there's the stress on someone who's a little... he isn't so bulletproof over short putts. So I'd say to him, this hole has to get a chance to catch the ball. And that will also get into the mindset there where there's more confidence, because the truth is, when you're not putting well, that hole looks like it's the size of a thimble. And you're not sure if you're going to make it from a few feet. So you're trying to finish it as close as you can. But you only start making putts when the ball's rolling at the hole and the hole has a chance to catch it. And if you're hitting putts with a little more authority that are missing on the high side, one or two of them nosedive in there, and then like Brad Faxon, you're like, dang, I'm not putting so bad. And then even more importantly for Scotty, who's the number one guy in the world, he doesn't have to answer those questions anymore. You see, the questions for Jordan Spieth and his game kind of started going away when he started playing better again. So for Scotty, I feel like putts have to miss high, and they have to miss long. They just do.
I want to just add one other thing here to what Mark said, because Scotty does keep things very, very simple, and it works really well with his full swing. The one difference in the full swing and putting is, in the full swing, you can do whatever you want with the golf ball. You can hit it high, low, left, right, doesn't matter. But when you putt, you have to comply to the property. You have to look at the property, and you have to play with the property. If the thing's going to go right to left, you got to play right to left. It's not like you can go, well, I'm going to play this left to right. You got to deal with what the property says. And so I think one of the things is, it's a departure from how his mind works. To that end, what I would say is that he has to depart from what he does with his full swing in order for him to have success. Because what I can tell you is if he keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to keep getting what he's getting. And what he's getting is eventually, at some point, going to lead to a real significant problem. And we look at players that have struggled with certain parts of their game. And again, I don't want to say it's the yips, but I will say this. If he continues down the path that he's going, my prediction is, unless he gets more technical, believe it or not, and he does things more, like Mark said, just go out there and just try to hit putts with as much break as you can and miss on the high side. Unless he departs from all the what he's doing now, he is going to end up in a really bad spot mentally. Because when I look at this, and I've seen this, when I look at this, he is on the cusp of heading down a bad path. The quickness with which he's gathering the golf ball with his eyes is alarmingly fast, to the point where he almost leaves the ball with his eyes before he makes contact. It's pretty bad.
And Rick, sorry, I'm thinking about this as Michael's talking there. And the truth is, you look at a Bubba Watson, they're various guys. You cannot, I don't care who you are, you cannot out-hit a bulky putter. You just cannot. You can strokes gain the thing from tee to green to death, and he'll be up there because he hits it so well. But Scotty right now is not interested in top tens. I'm sorry. he's playing for trophies, and you cannot win if you are not making 3, 4, 5, 6 footers over the final 9 holes of the event.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you can do that if you want to make like $20 million in a year on the course. But if you want to win, you can't. And I totally agree with that. But the thing that really stands out to me that is alarming is, like Michael, you were talking about his eyes leaving really quickly. And you could see that just watching the bill of his cap. But that doesn't happen from at a certain range, right? In the video that we've looked at, you have him out there at 15, 20 feet, and it's significantly smoother. And you get into that range where the expectation is make, and all of a sudden the eyes start darting. And that's why I completely agree with the drastic change concept here, because we're talking about 3, 4, 5 feet, 5 foot putts that you can train in your basement, and all of a sudden you make them when you play. They shouldn't be an issue for a professional athlete. But it could be something like Lucas Glover went through, where he couldn't replicate the feeling that he gets in competition in practice. So there's really not a way for him to practice unless he plays in a tournament every week. So I'm totally with you on the Jurassic change.
And I'll just add one quick thing here, Rick, and that's this. You know, the frustration that we saw out of Scotty at Augusta National in the Masters, is that was the first time that we'd really seen that dramatic a frustration from Scotty. He is a very sort of happy-go-lucky kind of guy, and Mark obviously can speak to this well better than any of us. But he's a guy, he's very approachable, he's very easygoing. It's a very simple thing. The game is kind of see ball, hit ball. When he gets on the putting green, it's not that. And the frustration was shown on a Tuesday morning when we were watching Scotty with Randy Smith. And I think that if he doesn't do that, I think we're going to see more of that, because it's getting to a point where, you know, you look at what he does with ball striking, and he should have won 5 or 6 times this year. Instead, he only wins a couple of times, and it's a great year, and he made $20 million, as Greg says. But at the same time, it could have been a record breaking year. It could have been a 5-6-7 win season if he'd have been able to just putt average, just putt, you know, like not gaining or losing anything, just putt zero. It could have been a much different season for him, and possibly even another championship, a PGA championship or something like that, because he put himself in some pretty good positions this year.
I find it to be such a fascinating conversation about the number one player in the world and potentially drastic changes happening. But I think it's fair. I think it's fair. So it's one that I always think is worth chatting about.
When Rory was dominant, all us pundits had something to say because he should have been doing something else and winning more. When Tiger wasn't winning, folks were like, well, what's Tiger going to do? This is just the nature of the beast nowadays. And it's part of the landscape for these guys. Yeah, that's what I said. They dread media. I was the on hand at the BMW. I was the guy that was dispatched to get the loser interview. And Scottie Scheffler has just been outrun by Victor Hovland. Scotty misstepped a couple times over the back nine. How happy do you think he was to talk to me on a television show?
Thrilled.
I'd be happy to talk to you, Mark.
The moon. Yeah, so that's just how it is. And whoever the next number one is, there's probably going to be the same rigmarole, I promise you.
All right. Well, listen, gents, I'm gonna leave you with this. Just going to go quickly around the room. I don't need much analysis, but here's the prompt. You get to inherit the golf swing of one of the players who will tee it up at the Ryder Cup. So your short list, maybe it's a Rory McIlroy. Maybe you're more of a Victor Hovland or a Ludwig Åberg. Maybe you like Max Homa's swing, or you're willing to take on the Scottie Scheffler's cut. So Greg, you tomorrow wake up with the golf swing of who?
It's really hard not to say Rory. I can't believe I'm not going to say Rory. I'm going to say Xander Schauffele. It's my favorite swing on the PGA Tour, I think. Speaks to the model, bowed wrist, tons of body rotation, and I love the tempo of that swing. I choose Xander. I think I could be wrong. But I love that swing.
I think that one will do you just fine. Mark, you wake up tomorrow with the golf swing of who?
Well, throughout my playing career, I couldn't hit the thing out of my shadow. So, you know me, I've got a boy crush on Rory McIlroy. So this is an easy one for me. But I will say that as an instructor, I've always gravitated towards an absence of excess moving parts. And when you watch Lud Åberg swing it and hit it, he generates a whole lot of gas for not very much stuff going on, and it's throughout the bag. And so the simplicity of the action from a wedge through a driver is enviable, but Rory's my guy.
Yeah, Ludwig, that's about as efficient as it comes. All right, Michael, put a bow on this for us. You're going to wake up tomorrow with the golf swing of which Ryder Cupper?
This is a simple one for me. It's the most hypnotic motion that we see in the game now. And, you know, everybody growing up, they all wanted to swing like Tiger. They wanted to swing like Adam Scott. Well, let me just tell you something. I'm with Mark on this one, and it's a simple one. Rory McIlroy has the most hypnotic motion in the game of golf. And if you're going to hit me with the magic wand and tell me that I'm going to swing like somebody, I want to swing like that guy. It goes far. It looks great. It looks effortless. And by the way, you know, what we like to say at my academy is we don't build ugly. That is not an ugly golf swing. There's a lot to love about that motion. And so it's a simple one for me. Don't build ugly. Go down Rory's path. That's the one.
Yeah, looks good and works very good as well, Mark.
If I may, you know, I've always, look, a golf swing's as good as the shot it produces. I've believed that since I played the game. And Rory's swing and the way the ball comes off the club face, I don't care who you are. And Xander's impressive and Ludwig and such. But when Rory hits the ball, it's just different. And when he hits it with a three-wood or a driver, Scotty is a banner from tee through green. John Rahm is incredible. But when Rory hits it, it's different. And you will watch the players, all the dominating guys, when they play alongside him, even they watch when he hits the thing. It's incredible.
When Rory hits it, it's different. I think we'll go out on that. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me. I love the stuff that you guys are doing. I was thrilled to be a part of it. So thank you.
Awesome. Michael Breed, Greg Ducharme, Mark Immelman. I'm Rick Amon. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.